This is Ryan Dean interviewing Mark Dean for History 252 Project. It's July 29th, 1993. This project is to get Mark's point of view during the 50s and the 60s and his life growing up in that period of time. And I'm going to turn it over to him now, and we'll see what he has to say.
Okay, this is me, Mark. And I don't know how to go about this other than to say that I was born January 17th, 1947, after the war. My parents, obviously, were young adults during the war years. My father was a naval sailor in the Merchant Marine, a gunner, and spent a few years at sea. However, at the end of the war, we grew up in Connecticut in a small town of about 4,000 or 5,000 people. So my point of view is one of a very rural farm community growing up with ethnic groups of people, mostly Polish, who were people who had immigrated to the United States probably in the 30s, many of them in the 30s and 40s, and as I grew up with people, of course children of those people who had immigrated, so they were second generation people, which was kind of interesting because my family was old line New England, had been there in the community for many, many years, and many of these other families, as I said, were immigrants and second generation immigrants. I think rural New England life was a whole lot like rural Georgia or rural Southern life as people think of it today here. It's a small community. Everybody was involved in the community. You knew all your neighbors. You could go off and leave your house unattended without any fear of anyone coming into your house or violating your property. You could leave your cars parked in the parking lot anywhere in town and leave your keys in the ignition. And in fact, I think I recall quite clearly my parents probably didn't remove the keys from the ignition of their car from the time of, you know, the late 40s until maybe into the middle 60s. It was still very rural, and everyone knew everyone else. And everyone felt very secure, and there was a level of trusting. People trusted other people. In the process of growing up in this small community in Connecticut in the late 40s and the early 50s, I remember quite clearly our family probably being a very average middle-income family, maybe even considered low-middle-income family, not having television when it first was developed in the late 40s. In fact, we didn't have a television until into the 50s. And I can remember sitting with my mother and father in the living room of our very small post-World War II home that my dad had built for the most part with his own hands, listening to radio, to those old shows like The Lone Ranger and to Amos and Andy. And I'm sure there were others, I just don't recall the names. But I can remember clearly sitting with them, using that as our entertainment for the evening. There wasn't any other entertainment other than socializing with church functions, or there was organizations called Grange Halls. I don't know if that's organizations like that are known in the South, but they were rural community organizations that were developed for socialization. Certainly in the 40s, maybe, I'm sure, from the 1600s in the New England area.
I don't want to interrupt you here, but I want to ask you a question. During your life, sometime in the 50s, what do you remember as being one of the more important events during that time for you? What did you notice was being significant to you and to the community at large?
I remember in the late 50s, it was 58 or 59, growing up in this very rural community, religious or church-oriented, very active in the New England Congregational Church. Strong values were taught, values of right and wrong, and in that time period there was an international incident that took place. The United States had flown a spy plane over Russia, and it was shot down. Again, I don't remember whether it was 58 or 9, but it was sometime in that time period. And as a third or fourth grader at the time, with these values that are taught, that, you know, Americans were right, never did anything wrong, you were taught you did everything right, the fact that our country was involved in a clandestine operation of espionage was a bit of a shock. I'm reasonably certain that it wasn't only a shock to people of my own age, younger people, but I think that was an attitude that was pervasive of a lot of American society, was that we were in the right. I mean, after all, we won the Second World War. We were significant in the winning of the Second World War. Korea was over. And here we were, caught in spying on our major competitor in the world. And I'm not, as a young person, being taught that you didn't do those kind of things, that you did everything correctly, and you didn't lie to people. If you were going to investigate them, you'd do it up in above board fashion. I think it just shocked the American people to know that they were involved in that type of a situation. Of course, it was denied at first, and then finally revealed in the end that we in fact were involved in these kind of activities. Another significant happening in the late 50s, 57 or 58, was the Russians beating the United States to space with launching of Sputnik 1 and 2. I think that took most Americans by surprise because everybody was feeling pretty good about themselves and America at that time. We won the Second World War. We had come out of Korea, probably not as well as we had out of the Second World War. But I think there was a general upbeat feeling. The economy was growing very fast. And to think that we were second to the Russians in putting an orbital spacecraft in orbit was a bit of a shock. The United States were in the process of putting their own spacecraft in space, and they in fact did only a few months later. But in the end, we were second in that activity. I think, which only helped to spur on further activities to put us ahead in that race.
Now, after Sputnik had gone up, at your age, you know, your fourth grade or whatever it was, you're getting ready to go to school, and you find out, geez, now these Russians, they're overhead of us now. You know, they're in space. Did you feel at that time that, you know, oh my God, you know, the Red Horde is going to come over here and take over the United States?
I don't think we had that feeling. I think it was sort of more of a shocked feeling that here we were, the big and wonderful United States of America, who had conquered Hitler and won the Second World War. You were growing up in an atmosphere of, you could do no wrong, and you did everything right, and you did everything first. And here we were caught square behind the eight ball. The Russians were first. And that was a bit of a shock. It was a bit of a shock to everybody. And of course, that spurred on the U.S. to put their satellite in space, in which they did a few months later. And I'm sure the Russians certainly planned theirs, knowing full well what the schedule was for the U.S. Explorer 1, I think was the first satellite to go into orbit. Well, you have to understand when you're growing up in a time period, which is relative prosperity in a country that had just conquered the ills of the world. It's hard to take back seat to an ally, if you will, who really at that time was posing threats in Eastern Europe. I don't think anybody in the country was ready for that at that time. As we got into the 60s, I must have been 13, 14 years old. I belonged to the Boy Scouts. And in 1960, I went to the Boy Scout Jamboree in Colorado Springs, which was quite an experience for a young teen in those days. Obviously, there was television, but people didn't travel like they do today. They learned many of the things they learned from books, not from videotapes and television as they do today. So a young person of 12 years old who had grown up in a very conservative New England atmosphere, climbing on a train in Hartford, Connecticut, and traveling by train, Pullman coach, from Hartford through a northern route through Chicago, with a brief stop there for a short afternoon tour, and then on to Denver and then Colorado Springs, where the Jamboree took place for a week. and then returned again by train via Washington, D.C. for a day's worth of tours of all the monuments, and then on back to Hartford. It was, for a 12-year-old, quite a significant activity. It was amazing. I'll never forget on the trip out. Traveling along, we left Hartford and traveled off out through New York State, and I'm sure Pennsylvania and Ohio, and got into the Corn Belt country. And when we started out, we had Pullman sleeping cars and dining cars. We were in traveling in style. By the time we got to the Midwestern states, somehow our dining cars had disappeared, and we had freight cars with picnic tables in them, which was another experience. Never forget first morning waking up as we were traveling. We must have been traveling parallel to the Continental Divide, heading from Denver on down to Colorado Springs. But waking up and looking out the window and looking at the Continental Divide has quite an impact on one who grew up in New England. Even though there's hills and small mountains, there's absolutely nothing to compare to that fantastic sight. Really, really impresses a person of that age. And then spending a week with a group of approximately 55,000 to 60,000 other Boy Scouts together, exchanging our thoughts, exchanging our patches and our neckerchiefs, and just getting to know one another. Another fairly significant activity in a young fellow's life at that age. And then returning through Washington, D.C. to visit all the monuments. It's, I think, a shame today that many people will see these types of things in videos and television programs. When they finally get to see these things, they go, oh yeah, well, that's what it's supposed to look like, because they've seen it through videos. I was lucky. I saw these things firsthand without a whole lot of pre-video mind-bending, so that it really wasn't a spectacular and impressive thing. I think we lose a lot of that today, as we see so much of it presented to us on the big screen in your living room.